This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, everybody. It is The After Party Live. I'm Kim McAllister. Thanks for hanging out this afternoon. Please click the like button right off the bat. If you haven't subscribed, that would really help me out. I'm trying to push my way up to 2,000 subscribers, so really grateful for that. It is Travel Tuesday, and today we're going to take a little trip to Spain together. So I'm excited about our virtual travel destination. And again, just grateful to have you guys along for the ride today. There's a lot to talk about. I know we had previously discussed a situation in San Francisco where there was a vandalism incident. This happened in Chinatown where I think on Lunar New Year, there was a child has been arrested, a young teen has been arrested for the damage of one of these robo-taxis. Well, now we have another incident. I don't know if you saw the pictures, but I have a photo to show you. And this happened in San Francisco as well. And it's a Waymo incident where you can see the person on there jumping up and down on the vehicle. I get that people are not liking these cars or kind of have something out for them, but it's kind of scary to see this type of, I don't know, violence happen in San Francisco like this. This Waymo car came to a stop in the middle of the road. Other cars were swerving around it to pass it. The vandalism that happened with the person on top of the vehicle, you know, anytime one of these cars encounters something, you know, in the road, some debris, something like this happens, it automatically just stops and its blinkers start to flash. So that's what happened here. This person damages this Waymo vehicle on Saturday at Market and Dolores, right in this area. So the person stomps on the windshield trying to crack it open. The windshield shattered and damaged. I don't know if the person was arrested, but again, it created quite a scene there, Market and Dolores. And again, it's not the first time this 14-year-old boy last week charged with in connection with setting a Waymo vehicle on fire. That one happened in the Chinatown area when fireworks were thrown inside the vehicle. No one injured. There were no passengers. I don't know if there were passengers in this one either. But when you have an empty car like this, it's kind of like almost like a sitting duck situation. Oh, it's just yet another reason why maybe this isn't the way to go. Yeah. I don't know. I have an update that I want to share with you on Brave Little Hunter. Remember, this is the 2-year-old orca whale calf that we've been following. I think Dee was the one that initially sent me the story. This orca stranded off the coast of Vancouver Island in Canada in this little lagoon. The Brave Little Hunter's mother was pregnant and got stranded in the lagoon on a sandbar and did not survive. So now her 2-year-old calf is left behind. There have been all kinds of attempts to rescue this calf. And I have this news report that I wanted to play for you today. It's a little bit long, but hopefully by now we're all invested in what's going to happen to Brave Little Hunter. So here is the latest on the situation.
Hello. It's a sight the entire Ahadasat First Nation has been waiting to see. Kwisa Hayes finally feeding.
Got it.
The 2-year-old orca calf eating seal meat like she would in her natural habitat. It's the first confirmed meal she's eaten in 27 days.
I think it was joy, really. I think the joy of the meal.
And seeing that now gives us some options, gives us time. Given that she was showing subtle changes in body condition, It's real important that she's getting those nutrients. So we're really happy.
It's a game changer for the nation and DFO, who were prepped and primed to make their second rescue attempt Friday, a multi-day mission with dozens of experts from around the province now put on hold.
We're looking at all these options about how we can use, first of all, make sure the animal's healthy with that, with seal, but also, yeah, using as an attractant to move the animal within the lagoon, possibly out of the lagoon.
For the first time, we can share with you Quisa Hayes's cries for help. Her calls recorded by researchers using a hydrophone, likely gone unheard by her pod out in open ocean. Brave Little Hunter's welfare sparking interest from all over BC, from musicians hoping to serenade the killer whale to safety, to the Prime Minister.
I think we're all following this story attentively. It is heartbreaking, and we're all worried. So I've ensured that Department of Fisheries and Oceans has reached out to the community, and we're going to continue to engage with them.
In the meantime, Ihatasat First Nation has launched a GoFundMe page to recoup the costs of housing and feeding the team, working on a long rescue mission that's not over yet. Inzabelos, Cassidy Moscone, Global News.
Yeah, so Brave Little Hunter, the rescue efforts continue there. We'll keep following it here on the After Party Live, and hopefully there will be some type of good outcome. That's what I'm hoping for. Chris from Menlo Park, I see your comment. Maybe you thought because I was playing a news piece that you were getting the wrong feed. Hopefully you're getting the right feed. I don't know. Hope everything is okay. Again, thanks for being here. Click the like button. Click the subscribe button. Really working on that, that 2000. So thank you for that. All right, let's take a look at the animal situation going on, because we've also followed, at least that I know of, two pair of eagles. There was a pair that didn't have a very successful hatching on the Central Coast. There's a pair in Redding, and now another pair of eagles is being named. It says eagle. This is at least one of them, right? So this is a this interesting name. They're naming this eagle pair Lucy and Ricky. They are pair of eagles in Riverside County. They have made their home in a wetlands habitat in Riverside County for several years, and now they officially get names again. Lucy and Ricky is what they've been deemed, and they just welcomed three new eaglets. So this is pretty cool. They're at the Prado Wetlands, which is a habitat near Corona, managed by the Orange County Water District. It is the largest man-made wetlands on the West Coast. And in urban observance of Earth Day this week, the Orange County Water District named them Lucy and Ricky and announced the successful hatching of their three eaglet offspring, which is really exciting. Because we saw that that doesn't always happen, right? That it's kind of a little challenging, especially when you have cold weather out in the elements. Not everything goes as it's hoped to go. But I have a picture of the eaglets I'd like to show you as well. Lucy and Ricky are the proud parents of three new eaglets. And I don't know if they have been named yet. Oops, that's not the right eaglets. Sorry, that's another eaglet picture. That those are eaglets, but these aren't the same eaglets. Nope. No, I don't have the photo up to show you. My bad, and I'm sorry, but take my word for it. Three new eaglets, and they're super, super, super cute. All right, let's move on to the airport cat. And this one's kind of a sad story. He's missing an eyeball. Yeah. He's a partially sighted cat, and he went missing on a flight. And weeks later, they still don't know where this little one is. The person who owns this cat, her name is Alyssa, and the cat's name is Rodri, R-O-D-R-I, Rodri. So Alyssa and her mother took their cat, and they were going to Europe on March 8th. And that's when Rodri went missing at the airport. And it's been more than a month. And they gave back the airport a broken cat carrier, no cat, and no answers to questions about what has happened to Rodri. So they're hoping to be reunited. The cat turned one in April. They say the carrier, which is Aegean Airlines, a Greek airline, and its baggage handler are no longer responding to their requests for information about Rodri or what they're going to do about it. They just stopped talking. So the woman has and her family have a home on the Greek island of Crete. And that is where they care for 60 stray cats. They feed them. They take them to the vet for medical treatment. They spay and neuter them. And this is a country, according to this woman, where cats aren't always treated well. I didn't know that about Greece. But often they'll arrange adoptions. They fly cats and dogs off the island to new homes and destinations around Europe. So she was staying with someone when she found a kitten living in a pile of trash, and one of her eyes was in really poor condition. They took the cat to the vet, who closed up the missing eye very well. The second eye was apparently turning white. And so she's got some definite vision problems here. But Rodri became a much loved member of their family. So they were keeping her. And now she's gone. So fingers crossed. We'll keep our eyes peeled for more information about this cat, Rodri. And hopefully Rodri will find her way home. We talked a little bit about ducks and Tony's problem with a duck nesting by his pool. Well, here's a duck rescue, since we're having some duck love today. These little ducklings wandered into a hotel lobby in Virginia, and the hotel staff put them in a little box, and they called the animal control. And they had seen what looked like a mother duckling kind of on the property or wandering nearby. And these little ducklings wandered right through the automatic doors at the Marriott Hotel in Richmond, Virginia. So again, they put them in a box, they call the animal control, and they say they think that they'd spotted what looked like the mother duck in the area earlier the same day. So they say they connected the dots, put all the dots back together, and took them to a canal nearby, and that's where they found the mother duck. And the rescuers say the mother duck was excited when the box of ducklings came to the canal. She could hear them making noise, so she came closer, and they were like, yeah, this must be the mom. They went right back together, let them go, and had a great day. So everybody's reunited in this particular situation. All's well that ends well. Let's move to speaking of animals. This, I don't know about this one, you guys. I really don't. Yeah. PetSmart has this new program. They're offering to cover up a bad tattoo. If you have a, look at that with that weird picture. If you have a tattoo that maybe you don't like, you know, maybe it was spelled wrong, no regrets, maybe it's just not something you love anymore. Well, they will re-tattoo you with a photo of your favorite pet. They're running this nationwide contest called PetSmart Tattoo Redo. They're going to pick 5 winners, and they're going to fly you. This doesn't sound, why does this not sound like a prize to me? They're going to fly you to Los Angeles for 2 nights to get your unwanted tattoo covered by a new one based on a photo of your pet. So here's what the prize includes. Travel from anywhere in the U.S., a 2-night stay in Los Angeles, a trip to Allium Tattoo Studio in Culver City. You're going to fly me to Los Angeles for 2 nights and then take me to Culver City? That sounds like a great time. The contest ends at the end of the month. The winners will be announced in May. So 5 lucky winners will be able to go to Culver City for a new tattoo. All right. Here's something that is wild. I can't imagine doing this. And I love the ocean. You know, the theme of this whole show is kind of oceany beach vibe, right? I guess I'm more of a beach Betty. I'll sit on the sand and watch people surf. I enjoy that. But this surfer is from Germany and has been known to surf the monster waves. And we're talking big. Already had the world record for a wave that was more than 80 feet, I think. 86 feet. He set the record in 2020. And he goes to this place in Portugal called Nazaré. Nazaré, N-A-Z-A-R-E with an emphasis on the E. Nazaré, Portugal. And he goes again this year. And this time, he surfs a wave that by drone estimates, 93.72 feet. So this guy is looking straight down. From this angle, you can't see how steep it is. It looks big, but it doesn't look like straight up and down. And that's what he's looking at. You know, when you come, I don't know if you've ever been skiing, but you kind of, your ski tips go over the edge and it looks like there's not even a slope. It looks like straight down. That's what he's looking at. 93.72 feet in Nazaré. He describes it as surfing the unsurfable. His name is Sebastian Stüttner. He's a German surfer. He said, the record to me is definitely secondary to actually riding the wave and everything that goes into it. He said, I think what was special about the last big day in February was that we surfed conditions that have never been surfed before. So Porsche Engineering had a role in measuring this wave. They used drone technology, and I guess they measure not only the height of the wave, but they track the surfer within the radius throughout the whole wave ride. So it's new technology that they use to determine the height of this wave. The World Surf League, which is the sport's global governing body, still has to confirm whether this wave event is an official world record. But given the way they measured it, it really looks like it. The day was February 24th, apparently produced these historic conditions in Nazaré, Portugal. So much that the organizer of this big wave event called Gigantes de Nazaré asked on Instagram if some of the waves, such as one surfed by Brazilian Lucas Chianca, could have exceeded the mythical mark of 100 feet. That's what they were looking at out there. That's just crazy. Look at that. I think it's amazing. They say it wasn't just the biggest storm, the biggest waves. It was a proper storm. I don't know exactly what that means, a proper storm. So Stüttner is 38 years old. He relocates to the west coast of Portugal for the big wave season, which is October through March. And he says he's adopted what he thinks is a scientific approach to find a wave that's 100 feet or higher. Honing his craft in wind tunnels, which they usually use to test Porsche vehicles, and then partnering with a tech company, Siemens, as part of a project researching the biomechanics of big wave surfing. So there's a science to all of this. There's also a bit of a thrill-seeking thing to all of this. Wild. I mean, I'm all at once frightened and also completely and totally amazed. I mean, it's just, I can't even imagine the fear of looking down. Maybe if you do it all the time, it becomes normal to you. But, oh, man. Yeah. You can't see him in that picture. You can kind of see his outline. You can't see his face. But he's a cute guy. I think I can show you. I think he's a cute guy. He's 38. Here, I have a picture of him. He's 38. And again, this is his thing. He does for half the year. And I would imagine gets sponsorships, gets paid by these companies to go do this. Here's Sebastian Stüttner. Check him out. There he is with his board. So this is his thing. He's looking for the 100 footer, but it looks like he set the record with the 93.76. Well done, sir. I like it. All right. Let's talk about this AI dog fight. This is an interesting situation. Oops. I'm going to skip. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm skipping from the dogfight to the Star Wars. If you're a Star Wars virgin, which means, you know, you've never seen Star Wars before, and there are people out there that have never seen the movies ever. And it's almost like a badge of honor for some people. Like, I've never seen Star Wars and I never will. What if, though, you could get paid to watch it? Then would you? Perhaps. So a Star Wars novice is being sought to watch 9 Star Wars films. The Finance Buzz is the website that's doing this. They're trying to celebrate Star Wars Day, which is May the 4th, as in May the 4th be with you. May 4th. They want to pay someone $1,000 to watch all 9 of the Skywalker saga films. They're looking for someone who's never seen a single Star Wars movie. And they're going to pay you $1,000 to do it. They say, we're looking for someone who's brand new to the franchise, a first-timer to the Force, a true young Jedi, to rate and then evaluate the saga from an outsider's perspective. The website says the chosen candidates will watch each episode in release order, starting in chronological order. You'll make your way from A New Hope all the way to The Rise of Skywalker. And if you're wondering, they say, why you didn't start, we didn't start with episode 1, you're probably the right person for the job. So the Star Wars side hustle, as they're calling it, pays $1,000, plus you get $100 toward the cost of streaming the films and going to see episode 1, The Phantom Menace, in theaters for its upcoming 25th anniversary re-release. So what do they get out of you? Your reviews and a lot of publicity for the film and for their website. The applications are being accepted on the website through the end of the day, May 4th. And again, the website is Finance Buzz, altogether, B-U-Z-Z, just in case you're that person who's never seen Star Wars. I don't know how that's possible. Apparently it is. Did you see this? You probably haven't seen it. I hadn't either before last night. It is a new design on a college campus. It's a wood cube design, so obviously made out of wood. It's designed, and it looks like it, when I say this, you'll be like, oh yeah, Danish architecture firm. They're called BIG, B-I-G. They worked with the faculty at the University of Kansas on this really interesting mass timber cube that's built on the University of Kansas. It's going to serve as an educational building. The School of Architecture and Design is what apparently is where it will, what it will house. It was chosen, this design, as part of an open call based on the needs and wishes of the students and the faculty. So it's a 50,000 square foot educational building. It'll have a diagrid structure made completely from wood. They use notched glue laminated timber and dowels based on traditional Japanese joinery to eliminate the need for steel fasteners or plates. So completely wood. Wood cube. All wood. Interesting. Kind of cool looking in a way. I'm sure it'll be as much or more interesting when it gets done. Speaking of design, how about this? It's always interesting to see how these new pieces of technology are designed. This is a Terra AI compass. So perhaps you're not really into taking a nature walk with your phone, but there are certain aspects of your phone that you might need, like, I don't know, how to get where you need to go, what direction in which to walk, right? This artificial intelligence and Gorp Core have been combined in a Terra compass. It's created by this design studio called ModemWorks, and it enables you to go on walks without your phone. No, not that you couldn't anyway. Remember the olden days when you took a walk and no one could reach you? I mean, if you're going for a big hike, perhaps you want to have something where you could, I don't know, have satellite or a way to contact someone if you got in trouble. What's wrong with just leaving your phone in your backpack? You know, it's there if you need it, but you're just not going to grab it. This is a compass that apparently has been created with your nature walk in mind. For people who want to go on a walk and either not take their phone or at least not have to look at it. This non-device, this is being called, lets you wander through without the distractions of your phone. I don't know if it's going to be a big seller. Maybe. The quote is, in a world overwhelmed by the constant distraction of smartphones, the need for a mindful connection with surroundings has never been more pressing. And so, this AI compass is apparently the answer to leaving your phone at home. I would argue it's still technology, right? I mean, you're still not leaving technology behind. I don't know. I don't think so. It's interesting, though. What about this? This is a Maserati. They have designed an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. A Maserati EV. They think the market is wide open for this. If the majority of electric cars are dull, then this is an opportunity. So says the CEO of Maserati. His name is David Grasso. He says, listen, it's about driving experience. Who says it has to be dull? You're going to drive an electric car? He says, I'm not saying the majority of electric cars are dull, but that's what I'm hearing from people, from customers. So it's an opportunity for us. So they just unveiled their first fully electric vehicle at Milan Design Week. They think their electric cars have as much charisma as the gas-powered sports cars that gave them their fame, Maserati. He said, even though the combustion engine was a key component of past models, the joy of driving can still be retained while replacing it with an electric drivetrain. He said, we don't sell engines. We sell luxury driving experiences. If you take one piece out of the puzzle, which is much appreciated, you have to make sure you replace it with something that's at that level, if not superior. Their goal is to provide the same benchmark level experience using state-of-the-art systems of electric motors versus a state-of-the-art combustion engine. They want to replicate the feeling of driving the combustion engine sports cars in electric versions through strategic positioning of the motors. And Grasso says what makes Maserati special, the first question they ask themselves, how do we put in an engine which is different from what we used to have? They have this unique type of drivability due to the fact that they have a long nose, as long as the non-electric engine used to be on the axis. And he said that gives it a completely different handling than any other car. So to keep the drivability of it, you change the way you put batteries compared to what anybody else does. Everybody else puts them toward the bottom. They said, we put it in a T because that keeps the central gravity low. Everybody's got one engine or two engines. He said Maserati has three because we have engines on both rear wheels. So it's a little bit different, this car. I don't know how much it is, but I can tell you this. It's the Maserati Gran Turismo Folgore, and it goes on sale this summer. It's the first fully electric vehicle created as part of its plan to transition to only offering electric cars by 2030. So, the horizon they have toward 2030 to be fully electric for Maserati might actually happen a little bit earlier than that. They're excited about it. So, and they're not the only luxury brand to do this. Rolls-Royce is as well. Even Sony. You think of them as maybe for headphones or television sets or whatever. PlayStations. They're apparently doing this as well with fully electric cars. It's a pretty sweet looking ride, I'll say that. I don't know about their new technology or how it works or whether putting things in a T-shape and having more motors on it makes it more expensive to charge. I don't know. Maybe that's okay if you're buying a luxury vehicle like this. We'll see how much it costs. I don't know. It's pretty nice though, isn't it? I think it is. You remember we talked about Kevin Bacon, and it was the anniversary of Footloose, and also the high school where Footloose was filmed, they're moving to a new high school. So their old high school where the movie was filmed is going to go away. And so there was a big push to get Kevin Bacon to come back for the last senior prom and dance before this high school is closed down. And it was successful, and he agreed to come. And here he is going to the high school. He's walking in with security. Pretty cool. I have to turn it off because of the music. But yeah, so they've got Footloose playing in the background. He's walking into the high school. He gives a big speech as well, dancing. There he is. They have a little chair for him, a director's chair. It's a big to-do as he returns to Payson High School on prom night. Here he is.
Go Lions! Here we are with this beautiful, beautiful spot on this beautiful, beautiful day. I tell you, it's been a long time. It's been 40 years. I mean, that just blows my mind, you know. Things look a little different around here. I'd say the thing that looks the most different is me. when I just first heard about this Bacon to Payson thing, I was like, wow, this is crazy. But you were all just tireless, unrelenting in your desire to have me return. And you talked me into it. You know, I think it's great to see that kind of commitment to anything. I also think that it's amazing the power that this movie has had to just kind of bring people together and connect on the basic ideas that are behind the movie of, you know, standing up to authority sometimes and to being forgiving of people who are not exactly the same as you, and for standing up for your own freedoms and your right to express yourself and for having compassion for other people. And that's what all of you have shown here. By turning what could be just, you know, a movie star coming back to get pat on the back into something really positive. And that's what we're going to do today when we build these kits. So thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you especially for the commitment to giving back to your community.
Yeah, as part of what happened there, the school and all the students have agreed to help with Kevin Bacon's foundation. So exciting and kind of cool to see him go back. Did you hear what happened with the trams at Universal Studios? There was a crash, unfortunately. Apparently, one of these trams took a turn, hit a guardrail. And of course, when you're in one of these trams at Universal Studios, no one is buckled in, right? It's not the way things work. So people came tumbling right out. Yeah. This was 15 people hurt when a tram carrying the tourists through the back lot at Universal Studios in Hollywood hit a guardrail and then tossed them right out. This happened Saturday night, just after 9 p.m. They were passing the Jurassic Park exhibit. They were making a left. And during that turn, the last tram car connected hit the guardrail, tilted, causing people to fall out onto the roadway. So 15 passengers had to be taken to the hospital for minor to moderate injuries. They're still looking into what happened there. Alcohol and drugs not considered a factor of this crash, but the CHP is investigating. Universal Studios says, yeah, there was a tram accident in the park. multiple minor injuries, they say, were working to support the guests and understand the circumstances that led to the accident. They do have some new attractions along that tour route, and they were planning to add other new features as well, including an immersive photo op, throwback tram cars, an official replica of the famous Hollywood sign, all as part of the 60th celebration. So kind of scary, you know, again, no seatbelts in those trams. Not that there should be, but maybe that would have prevented some type of injury. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Are you ready for it? Are you ready for it? Let's go. Let's do Travel Tuesday. How about that? Hold on. I have it. Yeah, there it is. Woohoo! Travel Tuesday, because we need the graphic. Can't do anything without it. I thought today we would go to Spain and discover the highlights. I found this 11-day tour. Not that we're actually going to pony up the money to go, but we can travel virtually, right? We can hang out and do this together. They say Spain, and we know it's true, is full of fascinating cultural experiences. On this trip that we're not taking for real, you can stay in 4- and 5-star hotels, have plenty of free time and private guided tours to explore. It starts off in Madrid, exploring stunning streets and sights of the Habsburgs quarters and the Royal Palace before taking a day trip to the UNESCO World Heritage City of Toledo. So I thought maybe we could do this together and take a look at some pretty pictures. Even though we're not really there, we can kind of pretend that we're virtually there, right? Okay, first stop. That's pretty nice. I like it. Yeah. So the first stop on our trip to Spain includes this beautiful area. The Art Walk and the Prado Museum is what you're looking at right there. They take you to this building designed in 1785 to host a royal art collection. It opened to the public for the first time in 1819. This very first royal collection started to increase significantly in the 16th century. It continued to thrive under the succeeding monarchs, and currently the collection comprises about 8,200 drawings, 7,600 paintings, 4,800 prints, and 1,000 sculptures. So that's going to take us some time to get through. They allot a full day for this one. They have works of art, historic documents. It's the main Spanish National Art Museum, and they say it's widely considered to have one of the world's finest art collection of Europe and Spanish art. There are masterpieces, Velázquez, El Greco, Goya, Rubens, Raphael, all in here. Pretty nice. Where are we going next? Here we are. That's pretty. Look at that plaza. Beautiful. We'll take that. This is the Royal Palace. They give you a private guided tour of the Habsburgs quarter. And it's in Madrid. This is the old part of the city. There are noteworthy places here, such as Puerta del Sol, Plaza Mayor, San Miguel Market, and here, the Royal Palace. In the 16th century, Felipe II established his court in Madrid. Back then, it was just small houses, churches, and not much, right? But the kingdom of the Habsburgs show off their powerful empire and wealth. I always thought it was Habsburgs from Germany with a P. They say Habsburgs with a B. Perhaps it's a language difference. I don't know. But the whole point was for them to show off their powerful empire and their wealth. So they invested and developed and transformed the city with new buildings, infrastructure like this iconic Plaza Mayor, and the Puerta del Sol, which became the geographical center of Spain. Other members of the aristocracy then also built their mansions in this area, so it became a really rich spot in terms of architecture from the late Renaissance through the early Baroque. And that all came to the 18th century with the construction of the Royal Palace. It's called a magnificent architectural masterpiece with an impressive inside decoration full of frescoes and tapestries. So it's a travel back to the golden age of Madrid and its magnificent buildings. They've got a 4-hour tour of the Royal Palace. Now that sounds fun. I think they'll all enjoy that. Yay. Next up, we're going here. That's right. It is Toledo, Madrid, which is where we shall head. And they take you to this UNESCO World Heritage City, which is so pretty with historical streets on a hill surrounded by the Tagus River. It's known as the Imperial City because it was the main venue of the court of Charles V before he established it in Madrid. So this is the city of three cultures because the Moors, the Christians, and the Jews all managed to peacefully cohabit in this city for centuries. And all of those groups left their traces behind, which you can see here. So there are three sites to visit in Toledo. The Primate Cathedral of St. Mary of Toledo, which is a 13th century temple, one of the jewels of Gothic architecture in Spain. So pretty on the inside and the outside as well. The Synagogue of El Transito, or Samuel, the most important Hispanic Jewish building in Spain, and they say the most beautiful and best preserved medieval synagogue in the world, which is also, by the way, home to this museum. It's called the Sephardi Museum, where you'll be able to learn about Jewish culture in Spain. And then the Church of Santo Tomé, which was rebuilt at the beginning of the 14th century and hosts the famous painting The Burial of the Count of Orgaz by El Greco. So they take you around to all these significant places. Pretty cool. I'll go there. And then, if you're tired of seeing art, how about a little dancing? Let's have some fun together. That's right. Bring it in to Seville, where we then head over here to the Flamenco and Tapas experience. It's the magical old town of Seville. We're discovering why Seville is the true home of tapas. We're experiencing the mysteries and the emotion and the power of true flamenco. Do you feel it? I already can. So first, you go to two family-run taverns where you eat tapas like a local. And then, after some wine and tapas, you go through a fascinating explanation of the roots and mysteries of flamenco, from its unclear origins to its current worldwide fame. And they have a show, a flamenco show, where it's power and passion and drama of real flamenco. And then they take you to dinner at a hidden family-run tapas bar that serves incredibly fresh cooked tapas, local wines, and dessert. This is the best night of the trip, right? Let's do it. All right, we're done dancing. We're back to architecture. That's pretty cool looking, I have to tell you. Here we are at a private guided tour of Seville's old quarter and its UNESCO World Heritage sites. It's the afternoon of leisure in Seville. A private guided tour. So what you have here is a walk around the fascinating quarter, the former Jewish quarter of this medieval city. This is where Jews were confined when Ferdinand III took the city from the Moors in 1248. Can you imagine living in a place with that much history? The streets are narrow, winding. The houses are quaint. They have patios and gardens in bloom all year round. And you can kind of feel the history in this area. The Cathedral of Seville is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is the third largest church and the largest Gothic cathedral in the world. It was built in the 15th century, and the construction lasted more than a century. They said when they built it, "Let us build a church so beautiful and so magnificent that those who see it finished think we are mad." It was built on the site of a mosque, and remaining parts of this mosque are still preserved as well. So that's pretty cool. I'd like to see that. I'm in. How about a winery? Back to the fun stuff, right? Yeah. Let's go see the winery. I'm in. This is Ronda in Granada. They take you to the village of Ronda, which is considered one of the most beautiful and oldest villages in Spain. It's right on top of a deep gorge with beautiful views. And then they'll take you to this boutique winery, which you can see here in the barrel room. The cellars are located in the old chapel of a former monastery. You've got a great local approach to winemaking processes. They have the oenologist explain everything to you. And of course, at the end, you get to taste the wine. I like it. It's a 2-hour tour of this amazing winery. I like it a lot. After the winery, you get to visit the village of Ronda, stroll around the charming streets, check out the gorgeous views from the 18th century bridge. I don't know about old bridges. I don't know about 18th century bridges, but all right, I hear you. I like it. You had me at the winery, though, for sure. What about a castle? Oh, yes, we have those, too. Apparently, yep, there are castles. There are absolutely castles. The castle, do I have a picture of this castle that I'm trying to tell you, to show you? Yeah. This castle is in Seville. I have to show you a different picture because if we're really on the tour together, then we're really taking the tour together. For some reason, sometimes you put pictures into the system we use and they get deleted. So here's this castle. I want to show it to you because it's magical. It's beautiful. Here it is. Look at that. This is a castle in Seville. And I'm down for this day for sure. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. You go to Flower Street, strolling around the lovely streets, and then there's this building. This is a merge, apparently, of a couple of different religions. It is a Jewish quarter and mosque cathedral. So, interesting. It's a one of the jewels of Muslim architecture in Spain, and a stunning blend of two religions and cultures which shaped this area, Islam and Christianity. They call it a magnificent, awe-inspiring architectural masterpiece, which amazes all travelers. They have a main hall with more than 850 double-arched columns, one of the most impressive examples of this type of architecture. In the spring months, especially May, coming right up, the flower contest takes place, and you visit patios and courtyards of the houses in this area. But how cool is that? I'm down with the castle or the religious architecture in this particular instance. Speaking of which, how about this? This is Alhambra Palace and General Life Gardens. So this looks like a pretty place to go see as well. There it is. It looks beautiful. This area, they say, is one of the ultimate highlights. You have the Alhambra Palace, originally created for military purposes, but it became a residence for kings. It was a fortress, a palace, Arab, Christian, all the features explaining the distinctive features of this impressive World Heritage Site. It's an historic monument. The palace where fountains trickle, leaves rustle, and ancient spirit seems to mysteriously linger. It's supposed to be enchanting. So, there is an entrance fee here, but it sounds fun. And you can, even after you see the building, keep exploring the beautiful city of Granada, walk around the old quarters, visit the Arabic-style bazaars here. They sell miniatures, purses, souvenirs, jewelry. So it looks like we're having a day of shopping. I'm down with that. You could take me shopping. I like it. about this? So pretty. This area is, you know, a lot of us may never actually go here. So it's so cool to see the pictures even. This now, we're headed to Barcelona, to the Gothic Quarter in Barcelona, the oldest part of the city, traveling back in history, exploring Roman ruins, medieval buildings, and Gothic cathedrals out of which the current cosmopolitan city developed. How beautiful is that, walking through those streets? Yes, please. And now to this area. This is pretty beautiful. This is a Gaudi masterpiece in Barcelona. It's Güell Park and Sagrada Familia Cathedral. Known as the capital of modernism, this area, Barcelona, it has some of the most celebrated modernist architecture and structures found anywhere. One of the great innovators, though, of his time was Gaudi, and he left his mark on Barcelona. And so you can go see the buildings left behind here. They give you a tour here. It's really cool. Paseo de Gracia is a really cool shopping street in this area, international shops. And then La Pedrera Casa Milia, which is a modernist building built by Gaudi. So, fun to see that. How about this? That's kind of interesting. My interest is piqued. This is in Barcelona, where you see this beautiful piece of architecture. Really cool looking, like a almost like a gate to the city. Yeah. And I think thus ends our tour. That's it. I hope you had a good time. I know I certainly did have a good time. Next week on Travel Tuesday, we'll take a look at hot springs around California, swimming holes, 5 secret California swimming holes to go to declutter your mind. So that should be pretty fun as well. Thank you for being here on Travel Tuesday. I appreciate you hanging out with me for it, taking a little trip to Spain. I hope you had some fun. And I will see you tomorrow. So tomorrow we have the Nicky Maduro Show. That's a bite-sized show that starts at 10 o'clock. Then at 11, it's the Mark Thompson Show, and Mark is winging his way to Washington, D.C. to visit his parents. So I will be taking the lead tomorrow. We have John Rothman that will be talking politics. He will be talking politics. Also, we'll have Belinda Weymouth with It's the Planet, Stupid. So please join me for that. That's from 11 to 1, and then we're back here for the after party as well. But I hope you have a great rest of your day. Make it a really good one, and I will see you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Oh, I forgot to tell you. PayPal information at the bottom of the show description, also in the About section here on YouTube. So thank you to everyone who has contributed to the show. And very quickly, before we get to the closing credits, I will show you the most current slides of all of our incredibly appreciated contributors. Couldn't do the show without you. Huge aloha, and thank you for keeping us going. All right. Have a great day, everybody. I will see you tomorrow.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.